Hello, this is Chris with the Champaign News Gazette for Monday, December 10th. We'll begin today's reading on the front page. When school's out, workers will move in. Abatement work on tap over break. From Champaign. Students won't be all that cleared out of Central High School over Unit 4's winter break. Before finals are finished on December 21st, District Capital Projects Manager Mark Rossler said workers will pack up rooms on the third floor, readying the area for hazardous abatement work over break. It's one more piece of the $87.1 million expansion and renovation of the 83-year-old building. Our crews are likening it a lot to what they would do over the summer to wax the floors. A lot of it is getting everything that's on the floor packed up and out of the way. Rossler recently told members of Unit 4's Referendum Oversight Committee that abatement crews would be in Central for about 10 days, working probably two shifts to try to get everything done. That gives us a minimal amount of time on the back end to try to get everything put back in its place, reconnect computers, reconnect smart boards. Similar work will also happen at Centennial High School, where administrative spaces, not classrooms, will be cleared out over break. The school board will vote tonight on two contracts for abatement work at the high schools, $99,000 with Environmental Assurance for Central, and $76,000 with Thornburg Abatement for Centennial. In other referendum-related news, demolition will continue this month on district purchase properties around Central, including those at 206 North New Street, 619 West Church, 615 West Church, and 500 West Church. Rossler said a demolition contract has yet to be written for the property at 617 West Church, which Unit 4 purchased recently from Deb and Tim Bowers after a drawn-out legal conflict. The board will vote tonight on design development cost estimates for McKinley Field, $6,600,000, and relocation of central storm and sanitary systems guaranteed by O'Shea Builders to not exceed $1,060,000. Also tonight, Unit 4 could add another administrative position to its roster. The board is also scheduled to approve a chief communications officer. No name or salary information has been released. A Room with a View, New Tradition, a year-round local art show at Busey of Urbana. It seems like a place you'd go to invest in great art, not view it. As part of a new initiative to showcase local art, more than 30 pieces now hang upstairs in the public spaces of Busey Wealth Management's corporate headquarters on Main Street in downtown Urbana. There's an oil on canvas piece by local artist Brian J. Sullivan, whose reflections in a red 57 Chevy painting emphasizes the iconic chrome of that classic car. There's a hammered coppered ear of corn and metal twisted into a tree, and a vividly colorful metal piece by Greg Stallmeyer, an automotive paint specialist who uses that talent to create art. And then there's Eric Nash's three-panel painting across an entire wall, a massive collection of tiny dots that together form a spectacular illustration of Champaign-Urbana's nighttime horizon, which Nash titled Jewel of the Prairie. A Champaign-Urbana native, U of I graduate, and professional artist living in Los Angeles, Nash was commissioned to come up with an original work to kick off Busey Wealth Management's exhibit. Local artists' work will continually be displayed on a six-month rotating basis with help and guidance from 40 North, the local nonprofit that promotes the arts, culture, and education. It's remarkable, 40 North Executive Director Kelly White said, of the opportunity for local artists to display their work publicly. That's all artists want, is to have their art validated and seen. And she added, an exhibition in a non-traditional space like this will give some an opportunity to experience art that they might never have seen otherwise. I love the precedent. Busey Wealth Management President Kurt Anderson said the hope is this is a trend-setting initiative for other local businesses. He encourages the public to come by during business hours, 9 to 5, Monday through Fridays, and see the 1868 collection, so named because that was the year Busey was founded. Busey Wealth Management will be purchasing some pieces as permanent additions to the ongoing exhibit. The collection already includes one permanent piece, Reflections, by the late local artist Billy Morrow Jackson, who was commissioned by Busey in 1984 to capture construction of the downtown Urbana building. Mr. Jackson's painting is a beautiful trip through local history, depicting notable people and places in the city. It was a very important thing for us to do, Anderson said of the new project, which was launched to coincide with Busey's 150th anniversary. Anderson said the company wanted to do this right, which entailed some minor renovations, adding lights and a wire hanging system to the second and third floor atrium, and hallway areas to properly display the art pieces, some of which are available for purchase, but not through Busey Wealth Management. The initial call for art attracted 160 submissions from local artists. It was a really great response. A panel of jurists, mostly Busey employees, selected the first round of pieces for the exhibition, which also includes art from fourth and fifth graders from Dr. Preston Williams Jr. Elementary. Each new exhibition will also incorporate student art. Another call will go out after the first of the year for a second round of art, from which a new lineup will be chosen and displayed for another 6 months. Anderson said the goal is to create a dedicated exhibition area that will be a continually changing landscape for people to enjoy. Hopefully, they will always see something new when they come back. Also from Urbana, council will consider deal with solar supplier and OK grants development rights and a chance at state initiatives. City governments and companies often find themselves waiting around for state money before moving forward with the project. The plan to bring a solar farm to Urbana is no exception. Tonight, the Urbana City Council will consider striking a lease option agreement with San Jose-based SunPower DevCo, which will allow them to apply for state solar incentives next year. But with so many renewable energy project proposals cropping up across the state, all of them wanting a piece of the Illinois Future Energy Jobs Act incentives pie, it's anyone's guess whether SunPower will secure funding during a lottery process. The two-year lease option agreement, the first of three steps to realize the solar energy project, would give SunPower the exclusive right to develop solar arrays on 41 acres of Urbana's landfill property managed by the Champaign-Urbana Solid Waste Disposal System. Under the agreement, SunPower would have the exclusive right for 2 years to develop the property, as well as a lease renewal option in the event it can't secure incentives or funding in that time. If they don't get the incentives, they can work to put together a viable project, said Urbana Environmental Sustainability Manager Scott Tess. But most likely, we would just wait for the next incentive lottery. Should SunPower receive the incentives it requires from the state in January, construction could begin as early as next year, and the partnership between the company and the city would move into a second long-term land lease agreement that would give SunPower a 25-year lease on the landfill acreage with an option for 2 5-year renewals. Tess said the project would bring in revenue for the city in the form of annual rental payments and taxes. SunPower would pay the city $100 per acre for the duration of the lease option, about $4,100 a year, and negotiate long-term leasing rates once it secures incentives or funding. City staff estimate the long-term rates could be between $300 and $1,200 an acre per year. The ultimate goal of this partnership with SunPower is a future opportunity for the city to purchase up to 40% of the electricity the project produces, wattage slightly more than the city building's annual consumption. But Tess said that wouldn't be the only benefit. It would also support the state's renewable portfolio standard, and it would deliver cost-effective electricity to customers that may be in town. And it may put those acres that we lease back on the tax rolls, generating tax revenue. And from Mahomet, suspects in string of Spring Lake area break-ins wanted. Champaign County Crime Stoppers need help finding the people responsible for recent house break-ins near Mahomet. Between November 25th and 27th, sheriff's deputies received several complaints of break-ins to houses and buildings in the Spring Lake subdivision southwest of Mahomet, and two houses on County Road 2500 North, north of Mahomet. They learned the suspect knocked on doors, and if no one answered, proceeded in through back doors. Two burglaries, one at 8:15 p.m. and another at 9:15 p.m., were interrupted by victims, causing the burglar to run off. He was described as a white man, 5'10 inches to 6 feet tall, thin, and wearing dark clothing. Some of the stolen items were a PlayStation 4 gaming system and games for it, Xbox 360 gaming system, Sony speakers, Beats headphones, a Smith & Wesson 9mm pistol with ammunition, DeWalt 20-volt drill, jewelry, and loose change. Investigators would like to hear from anyone who might know the burglar or someone with stolen items. Anyone in the Spring Lake subdivision or along 2500 North who might have surveillance video that shows someone knocking on doors or trying to get in vehicles is asked to give it to the Champaign County Sheriff's Office. If you have any information regarding this crime, contact Crime Stoppers at 217-373-TIPS. From the sports page, attention please. Before Illinois volleyball hits the road for Minneapolis ahead of its national semifinal against Nebraska at 8 p.m. on Thursday, beat writer Scott Ritchie breaks down the Final Four field. Illinois. Their coach is Chris Tamas. The start of his head coaching career has gone pretty well with 55 wins in two seasons and now a trip to the Final Four. Their best player is Jordan Poulter. The senior setter should factor significantly into the AVCA National Player of the Year race. Their fans cheer the most when Jacqueline Quaid obliterates a defender on a back row attack. The junior outside hitter has become a dangerous weapon. And finally, they'll sing We Are the Champions on Saturday night if they simply do what they've done in their 17-match winning streak. Serve strong, vary the attack, and put up a nearly impenetrable block. Nebraska, their coach is John Cook. Tamas' old boss has his team in a fourth straight Final Four, two of which the Huskers have won. Their best player is Mikala Falk, who's been a key factor in each of Nebraska's last two NCAA titles and is a force to be reckoned with at the net. Their fans cheer the most when just about anything happens. The NCAA attendance leaders somehow average a bigger crowd than the Devaney Center holds. And finally, they'll sing We Are the Champions on Saturday night if they can replicate what happens when the Final Four is held on their home turf. Two of their five total titles came in Omaha. BYU. Their coach is Heather Olmsted. Fourth-year coach comes from a coaching family. Brother Sean is BYU's men's coach, and dad Rick coached Karch Kearley in high school. Their best player is Ronnie Jones-Perry. The Cougars' kills leader has averaged 6 kills per set in the NCAA tournament. Their fans cheer the most when Jones-Perry is crushing at the pin. She has to attack McKenna Miller, went down with a torn ACL in early November. And they will sing We Are the Champions on Saturday night if they can beat Stanford again and then prove they can also handle what the Big Ten has to offer. And finally, Stanford. Their coach is Kevin Hambley. Former Illinois coach is back in the Final Four for the first time since guiding the Illini there in 2011. Their best player is Catherine Plummer. The reigning NPOY is Poulter's main competition for the honor this season. Their fans cheer the most when Tammy Allade puts the roof on an opposing tack. This is a Hambley team. He's going to get the most defensively out of his middles. And they'll sing We Are the Champions on Saturday night if Plummer goes off like she did when the Cardinal won the national title in 2016. She's far and away the engine that drives this team. Back to the front page, Villa Grove reeling after deaths. They were such a valuable part of our community, Pastor says. From Villa Grove. Two Villa Grove residents killed and another seriously injured in a car accident Friday are being remembered for their huge hearts and lives of service. John Jones, 75, and his wife Shirley Jones, 77, and their friend and neighbor Christine Trudeau, 66, were on their way to Newman, to visit a friend in the nursing home when Mr. Jones ran into the back of a piece of construction equipment that was cleaning mud and debris off the highway. The driver of the skid steer was taken to a hospital later for treatment. A release from the Douglas County Sheriff's Office said the crash happened about 4:45 p.m. on County Road 1450 North near 1835 East, about 3 miles east of Villa Grove, on Friday night. It was twilight and those things just blend in, said Douglas County Coroner Joe Victor, who was at the crash scene. He said Mrs. Trudeau died as she was being put into the ambulance. Mr. Jones died at 7:31 p.m. Friday at Carle Foundation Hospital in Urbana. His wife remained there Saturday in guarded condition, a victim of multiple fractures, according to her brother-in-law, Bill Jones, of Villa Grove. The whole town is in shock. They were such a valuable part of our community. They all had service hearts, and their last act of kindness was reaching out to someone else, said Dwayne Piercy of Villa Grove, who is the pastor of Victory Church in Camargo. The trio was intending to visit Percy's mother, Mary Percy, when fate intervened. Percy said his mother suffered a stroke almost a month ago and that before she entered the nursing home, about 2 weeks ago, the Joneses and Mrs. Trudeau rallied around her, helping her in her home. Percy drove to Newman on Saturday to break the news to his mother about her close friends. It just broke her heart. They cared so much about others. They were everywhere doing so much for everyone else. That was just who they were. The Joneses are members of Villa Grove United Methodist Church, which is just down the block from the Senior Center, where Mrs. Trudeau was coordinator of the Peace Meal Program. Percy said the three were good friends through the Senior Center. Mrs. Trudeau was also known for creating magnificent designer crafts. Christine was coming to our church in Camargo, Percy said. She was in Bible study, prayer group, definitely a woman of faith. She leaves behind a husband, Larry Trudeau. They live down the street from the Joneses. Dr. Bill Jones, a dentist in Villa Grove, said his younger brother was working full-time, even though he's been retired for years. He was teaching Spanish at Heritage High School in Broadlands. He was a sub, but he subbed the whole last year and almost halfway through this year. There's a shortage of Spanish teachers. The school district posted on Facebook about the accident Friday night, expressing profound sadness and saying the counselors would be available Monday for those who want help processing the loss. Likewise, Villa Grove United Methodist Church Pastor Sandy Heyer posted on Facebook how much Mr. Jones will be missed by the congregation. His humor, his singing, his positive outlook on life. As pastor, I will miss his counsel and his faith, and his love for God and his love for all people. Bill Jones said his brother loved children and loves to sing, and he plays banjo and the guitar at the drop of a hat. He sings in the church choir. Besides work, church, and the Villa Grove Senior Center, Jones said his brother and sister-in-law were very active in the Masonic organization. They were about to go out of office as the heads of the Order of the Eastern Star chapter based in Tolono. Bill Jones said John and Shirley Jones have 4 children each. The Joneses' brothers, including John's twin Tom of Paxton, grew up in Villa Grove. Shirley Jones is from Paxton, according to Bill Jones. Mrs. Trudeau also grew up in Villa Grove. It's such a tragedy. They were all people of faith, and we just believe God has them now, and we are going to see them again someday. Back pay provision part of U of I's deal, if necessary, campus to cover $31 million in costs through 2025. From Urbana. A new document outlining the University of Illinois' promise to cover fundraising shortfalls at the Carle Illinois College of Medicine calls for providing up to $31 million through 2025. If needed, but there's a backup provision as donations ramp up. The campus has already agreed to pay the college almost $20 million of that total over the next few years to renovate the medical sciences building and pay for library acquisitions and staffing. The medical school's financial situation will be revisited in fiscal 2023 to see if more campus support is needed based on its fundraising pitchers, U of I officials said on Friday. The U of I released the Supplemental Support Funding Plan Commitment to the News Gazette last week. While the general parameters were already public, the document provides additional details. The commitment essentially redefines the financial support that the campus agreed to provide for the college's first 10 years as part of its accreditation plan, approved by the National Liaison Committee on Medical Education. The money is no longer simply fundraising income, but supplemental support. The original financial plan called for the medical school's operating and capital expenses to be covered by three sources of income: Carle Health System, student tuition revenue, and money from a college endowment funded with private gifts. That endowment was supposed to generate income of $31 million from 2016 through 2025. But U of I officials said last spring that fundraising was behind schedule, and the new document says it's unlikely that the endowment will provide the full $31 million. The campus agreed to cover the shortfall using money from a discretionary fund controlled by the chancellor for academic priorities. The campus last year provided $14 million to renovate the medical sciences building, an expense the medical school had originally planned to cover. And the $4 million for the medical school's library will be spread out over the next 7 years. These are investments that needed to be made up front, said Paul Ehlinger, Associate Chancellor and Vice Provost for Budget and Resource Planning. Combined, those contributions will cover the endowment income promised in the accreditation plan through fiscal 2022. If the medical school still has an operating deficit at that point, the campus will dip into its discretionary fund again to provide additional money in fiscal 2023, 24, and 2025. We will take a look at the resources we have through fundraising and how that compares to our budget. If the fundraising exceeds our plans, there will be an opportunity to basically provide funding back to the campus. The expectation, as it's currently written, is that they would pay it all back, added Vicki Gress, Executive Associate Provost for Budget and Resource Planning. The supplemental plan has been shared with Carle and the accrediting agency. The campus financial support is not unprecedented, Ehlinger said, as it has provided similar funding for major projects at other U of I colleges. The new engineering-based medical school, however, has intended to be privately funded. Obviously, this is a high priority for this campus and this university. The medical school has hired a new fundraiser, Jessica Breitbarth, who will earn $175,000 a year as Associate Dean for Advancement. The campus also pitched in $363,000 this year to help cover the 32 full-tuition scholarships awarded to the medical school's first class, though that wasn't mentioned in the new document. That money also came from the chancellor's discretionary fund, which does not include any tuition income or state funding. And from Urbana Schools, Williams pay $1,200 per day as interim. Board says it sought separation deal with Owen, but he retained legal counsel instead. While Urbana looks for a new school superintendent to replace the ousted Don Owen, interim fill-in Preston Williams will be compensated up to $144,000 for a maximum 120 days of work in the job he once held. Meanwhile, the school board, which voted last Tuesday to place Owen and Assistant Superintendent Kathy Barber on paid leave effective immediately, said its search for permanent replacements will begin shortly. Williams, who spent 26 years in the district, retired as superintendent in 2013. Per state policy, interim superintendents can work a maximum of 120 days. Williams' employment agreement, signed Tuesday, calls for a per diem rate of $1,200 per day for regular services for the school district. Gail Jeffries and Jean Quarter will also turn to administrative roles on an interim basis. Jeffrey's employment agreement calls for her to be compensated up to $84,000 for no more than 120 days' work. Quarter is expected to sign her agreement today. In addition to Owen and Barber, former Urbana Assistant Superintendent Samuel Biden has been on leave since late October. He faces felony charges of eavesdropping for allegedly attempting to record an October 28th school board meeting, which was held in closed session. At that meeting, the board was to have discussed the employment of both Biden and Owen. The board has been tight-lipped since announcing the administrative changes, first via a press release last week. In a statement on Friday, the board said it wished to express our deep appreciation to Dr. Owen and Ms. Barber for their decades of service to the Urbana School District. We did what we felt was best for our district, the district went on to say in the statement. We cannot, however, comment publicly about personnel matters out of respect for the privacy and rights of the individuals involved. In a separate statement emailed to News Gazette Media, the board shared more detail about the process that led to Tuesday's vote. Members said they informed Owen during executive session following a November 20th board meeting that his contract would not be renewed and that they were interested in bringing in an interim superintendent to manage the district in the short term. The board then expressed its willingness to enter into a separation agreement with Don. However, this needed to be accomplished before December 1st in order to publish the agenda for the December 4th meeting. The board also explained if an agreement could not be reached before then, the board would place Dr. Owen on a paid leave at its December 4th meeting so it could bring in Dr. Williams. Two members of the board were assigned to work with Owen on a separation agreement, which never happened, according to the board. Its next correspondence about the issue came on November 26th from an attorney representing Owen. Once legal counsel had been acquired, all discussion progressed through the attorneys. Obviously, no agreement was reached, and the agenda was published with the item to place Dr. Owen on leave. Because no clear reason was given for either Owen or Barber's leave, public comment Tuesday night was rife with speculation, with some speakers suggesting the personnel moves had been prompted by the board being positioned against various efforts in the district to create racial equity, including the move to a disciplinary system based heavily on restorative justice. In a statement that night, the board had advised administrators to slow down and listen to concerns from Urbana staff, students, and community members before completing the transition to a deanless middle and high school. Some community members argued that the deans had not only been crucial in their role as facilitators of school order, but had served in numerous capacities and enjoyed trusting relationships with many students. Although Owen and Barber were placed on paid leave effective last Tuesday, both retain tenure rights within the district, meaning they can still serve in certified roles in some capacity, according to the board. We'll take a short break now and return with the second half hour of the Champaign News Gazette for Monday, December 10th. Please stay tuned.